This is Billy Carson with ForbiddenKnowledge.tv. Forbidden Knowledge TV has just reached its 1 year anniversary. That's right, 1 year. And as a show of appreciation, we are giving all new subscribers a free 30-day trial of ForbiddenKnowledge.tv. That's 30 days to binge watch thousands of movies, documentaries, conferences, workshops, lectures, yoga classes, meditation courses, and so much more. So log on to ForbiddenKnowledge.tv from your computer or mobile device, or get the Forbidden Knowledge TV app on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon, iTunes, or Google Play today, and use coupon code 30DAYSFREE. That's coupon code 30 days free on ForbiddenKnowledge.tv today. You are watching Forbidden Knowledge TV. I'm Billy Carson, aka Forbidden Knowledge, another great Forbidden Knowledge podcast. I have James Andre Jefferson Jr. in the house.
Thanks for having me, man.
For those of y'all who don't know, Andre, tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Recently, I just did a Netflix show called The Circles Season 3, and I actually won. It was a competition for $100,000. I've been a comedian since I was 14 years old. That's the first time I got on stage, and I'm on-air radio personality for a bunch of different markets out in LA, Arizona, Vegas, Texas, a few more. I don't know them all on top of my head right now. But yeah, I'm a professional ish talker. Can I cuss on here? No, I don't want to cuss.
So, you know, well, I come across your site can be a little raw down there, but I don't think it's really over the top, though. It's still kind of really, in my opinion, manageable compared to what I see, you know, some people doing and saying. So I don't think you're on the edge, but it's not over the top, you know, in terms of the language. But
community guidelines will change how you do things. Community guidelines will whoop your ass when over the years, page been taken away. I was kicked off YouTube one point. My stuff used to be way more raw, but I started reading the community guidelines. And being in this is a business, so you got to be smart. You can't just be like, oh, just say whatever I want to say on Instagram and get mad at them as if they don't have a list of rules.
Right, right. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, a lot of people don't understand. Like, I have a lot of big accounts. I have 140 social media accounts now. Okay.
140.
Yeah. Across all the different platforms. Yeah. 4.5 million followers. But I've lost big accounts. I had an account that went down with 1 million subscribers. I had Forbidden Knowledge account on Instagram went down twice. I got it back twice. You know what I'm saying? I was like, whew, once right before I hit 1 million.
And that hurt when it happened.
Listen, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm getting on these texts. My phone is blowing up at 2 a.m. I'm like, what's going on? Your site's down. I'm like, my account's down. I'm like, oh, I can't even see it, you know? But again, like you say, all these community guidelines and all these things they got, you don't even know they exist. And the next thing you know, your account's disappearing, it's gone or whatever. And so we have to be so careful and we have to be very crafty. You have to be very crafty on how you put your stuff together. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of little tricks you have to do to avoid the try not to cuss in the first 5-10 seconds of a video. Yeah. You can cuss, just don't do it early on.
Right.
And I used to start my videos off. I used to say, well, excuse the F out of me.
Right.
And I noticed how it was literally affecting my page. I was like, I gotta drop that.
Yeah.
So it's just about adapting to whatever situation you're in. Just like if you're on stage, you have to adapt to the situation you're on.
Right, correct. Yeah. So Like, did you always know you wanted to be a comedian? Were you funny as a kid?
So people told me I was funny when I was younger, but I had a when I was younger, I had a serious stuttering problem. I was fat. I sweat a lot. I had eczema, like horrible eczema. Like my hands were just messed up.
Wow.
And I say around middle school, people start telling me I was funny. And then I seen something called BET called Coming to the Stage. And there was this comedian. His name was Lil JJ. He's from Little Rock, Arkansas. And he won the competition. He came in second place. I always forget. Duvall was on the same season. And Lil JJ was 13. I was 13. And that was the first time I started going into research. And research was much harder back then because you can't just Google it, anything, whatever. But I was 13, 14 on the city bus, just trying to get on stage wherever I can. Some clubs would let me. Some clubs would tell me you come in, perform, but leave immediately because they didn't want to get in trouble or whatever.
Right, yeah. Wow, at that young age, huh?
Yeah, it's first time I got on stage.
Man.
I always forget. It's February to 2003.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. So you're a young man. So what's interesting about that, too, is the fact that you found your passion early in life.
Right.
You know,
and it's always important to do things to fuel your passion, because comedy doesn't always pay the bills, especially you're nobody. You don't have no followers. You don't have nothing. Mm-hmm. This is back before MySpace was even a thing when I first started doing comedy. So I had to do other things I always had a job. I worked in summer programs. I worked in grocery stores.
Yeah.
I used to dumpster dive at an early age just to get enough money to buy my bus pass.
Wow.
And so I was hustling. I was passionate about it. I was hungry. Took me a few years to start getting good at it, but
whatever it takes. A lot of people miss that. A lot of people they may have a passion. They don't know how to monetize it, but and sometimes what it really is not that they don't know how to monetize it. They don't want to put the energy in to get to the point where they can monetize it or live within that passion. In other words, some people will probably not even consider diving in a dumpster or doing some of the jobs you had to take, you know, just to be able to make ends meet.
I was a sign spinner.
Yeah.
I was on the corner signing spins, all that. What people have to realize, they see, I only make a crazy amount of money, but I didn't start monetizing my platform until last year. And I've been having followers since like 2014, 2015. I just never wanted to promote a bunch of different brands because it's like, I'm trying to make comedy my main thing. I don't want to become a influencer and a content creator, even though I am. But that was never the goal. I always want to make money off my voice and not off like being an Instagrammer or a TikToker or whatever.
Right. Gotcha. I remember when I first saw you come on Instagram, I don't know how in the world I got you got on my feed, but somehow I got you on a popular page or something. And I started following you right away. And I saw your account start growing and growing and growing. And I saw, you know, you would have the most incredible little skits. You would piece together things and that face you make.
Right.
With cracks. But me and my girl be dying 2-3 o'clock in the morning, be rolling out of the bed and stuff when you make that face. So how do you come up with the content? Like, what do you do to come up with all this content? Like all these skits?
So now I don't know how long you've been following me. I've always adapted to whatever Instagram or whatever platform is. Now I've noticed Instagram appreciates original videos. Like that's why I post original videos first. I used to do side by side, but the reels and the TikToks, they like the vertical format. So I said, you know what? Let me just play this video and just do a face expression instead of always having to be talking. It's been working since I switched from what I used to do. It's been doing much better.
Right. I kind of noticed that too. When I went from I used to have the side by side, kind of like We Heart Now.
Right.
And those used to do phenomenal. But then
when
I had to switch to the unilateral, horizontal, you know, zoomed all the way in. You can see my, the blood in my eyeballs. Then it works.
Right.
Pretty interesting. And so, but like when you're sourcing your material, you're just surfing the internet and
just wherever people, it's now that people see I'm reacting to random videos, my followers send me videos every day now. Okay. So I just go through, just find stuff. Sometimes if I can find the original creator or the original person, I hit them up. Say, hey, I'm Legally, I could do it because I'm reacting to a video. So, yeah. But I still give them a heads up. I tag them, give them the proper credits and all that.
Cool. Nice. Then, Nice. I noticed that. Yeah. It's pretty crazy. People have to understand, like, for you, for example, what you said, you really didn't start monetizing your account until just about maybe a year ago.
Yeah.
I went through the same situation.
Right.
Yeah. It's not like you just hop on social media and make money.
I've been making videos online since 2009.
Mm.
I actually got a funny story.
Yeah.
So I was part of this YouTube network. It was called Forefront. It was like a black YouTube network with a bunch of black YouTubers. At this time, people like King Bash was on there, Daystorm, a bunch of big content creators. We got this email saying, I just joined the YouTube network. And within a week, I got an email saying, hey, we're about to go film some stuff for this new app. They have all these black content creators on there. And if you have an iPhone, come out. I had an Android at the time.
Mm.
And so I didn't go.
Mm.
The people that were on that list were the King Batches and all these people. And they were talking about, not TikTok, but Vine. Remember when Vine popped off?
Yeah, Vine.
I could have had an early start at this point in time. And at this time, I had more subscribers than King Batch. I had more followers. And I just watched him take off within 2 months. So that's why now I'm always about adapting to new things. Because if you stay behind and I got an Android. Right now, apps are easier to go on iPhones because iPhone is just one phone. Android got like 1,000 different phones.
Right.
So it's always easier to get an iPhone when it comes to content creating.
Gotcha. I understand. Yeah. Yeah. I've been in that situation where, for example, when Instagram came out, I was like, okay, pictures. I'm like, yeah, I really don't get it, you know?
Exactly.
And then a few more months went by and more celebrities were on there and stuff. And this is about like 2010. Finally, 2011, I said, okay, let me just give this thing a try. I don't know. I'm not going to put up a picture of a cat and some food, but I'm going to put up something. And I put up a picture of an elongated skull out of Peru. Paracas skull, which is like one of these huge skulls. It only has one parietal plate, so it's not really what we consider a human.
Right.
It's in a museum down in Peru. And it got like 5 likes. And I was like, oh, okay. Hey, maybe they want to see this stuff, you know?
We popping with the 5 likes. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Hey, you remember when I used to get to like 9 likes? I would like it myself so it could take away the names. I used to have the names there. Like the usernames or whatever. That. Yeah, I used to do that. And it got to like 9. I would click my own like so I could take away. It'd just be a number.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, we started from the zero, the low.
That's how you do it. And the way I did it, because Instagram video was already successful, Snapchat was already successful. So I've always tried to figure out, like, I got to put myself in smaller apps. So there was this app called Anchor. It's a podcasting app. Now it hosts podcasts, but before it was more of a vocal Twitter. That's what back in the day when it first came out. And I became the King Batch, the biggest guy on this app. It was only probably 10,000 people on the app. Then there was another app that came out. It was called Ghost Codes. Now, the one thing Snapchat was lacking was the discoverability was horrible on Snapchat. It always was. So this app made it possible where you'd have some discoverability. And so I was on top. Because of Anchor, I was on top of the Ghost Codes list for the comedy section. And so then my Snapchat blew up. So then I used my Snapchat followers to come over to my Instagram, the mainstream app, to help blow up. So I took 10,000 from one app, 20,000 from another one, 50,000. I brought them all and centered it into Instagram. Then, of course, like TikTok and all, Facebook page and all that stuff. There's no one way route. There's no one route to get to the top. You got to hustle it. You got to study. You got to know what you're doing. People want to do shit and they never. I could type in Instagram algorithm and there's 5 people that made a video within the last month about the algorithm updates. Yeah. And the people don't even know that. I'm like, do you really want to do it or you just act like you want to do it?
Exactly. It takes study. You got to study, research. I go on other people's accounts that are similar to mine and they're maybe getting more traffic or seem like they're getting more, you know, more views. Right. I try to analyze what did they do different than I didn't do.
Right.
And let me try to figure it out. Experimenting, doing tests on how you post. When you post, the type of post, the shape, the size, the quality of the video. I mean, all those different things come into play.
All of it matters.
Yeah.
Every bit of it.
Yeah. Anybody ever get really pissed off at you for for doing a video?
I'm not 100% sure because I work in hip hop radio, and so I used to make some videos about Black China, and I remember we were on stage at the what was that, the Dove concert, and somebody told me she kept looking at me like she knew who I was, and I've been in situations where like I was on Street Team, and the guests we were having would recognize who I was because this at this time Royal Star was reposting me, but angry. I've had big celebrities like hit me up that I clown, and like Triple X Extension hit me up. Yeah. The Rock sent me voice notes about it. Will Smith reposted my videos before. Oh, and it's just me just clowning them. That's literally it. That's why I say the whole Will Smith thing is funny because I know he could take a joke. I sit there and clown him, and he reposted the video.
Nice. Yeah, that's good, man. That's good. That's too funny. Yeah, you know, I think. You know, comedy is another one of those things that is a natural healer on this planet.
100%.
Yeah. And that's really, you know, a lot of people overlook it as a healing mechanism, but it really is a healing mechanism because laughter releases endorphins in the brain and 100%. Actually can calm you down, make you feel more relaxed after you get done with that laugh, let you get out all the trauma that's in your body, all the laughing and moving and bending over and shaking and all that, mm-hmm. it releases trauma.
And I think that, all the time.
Yeah, people like you are really, really important to the planet because, like I try to tell people all the time, sometimes I post something that's funny. I'll be like, people will get, you know, comment like, why are you posting this? I'm like, because you can't be serious all the time.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
And just like me, every now and then I would do a serious video because it's something I care about. So,
right. Yeah. Right, exactly. So, It's really important, man. It's really important to be able to have people like you and, you know, doing comedy. I have a TV network that I launched about 2 years ago.
Okay,
it's called Forbidden Knowledge TV.
Okay. That's good.
We got to get you a show on there, man.
Hey, man, I'm with it. I'm all down, you know. Just bring a video camera. I'm there. I'm ready.
Yeah, definitely. We filmed 10 new shows for this first quarter already. They're all in post-editing right now. Got a couple documentaries also in post-editing.
Okay.
And now we're looking to, you know, set up some things for the fall. So I'm going to reach out to you again, man, and see if we can.
You said 2 years ago you started?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
So you started right in the beginning of the pandemic? Did you start it and then the pandemic started?
Right in the beginning of the pandemic. Right in the beginning.
That,
you know,
it's interesting. That was the best time.
Listen, I had Forbidden Knowledge TV before Netflix existed. And then I had it online, I had it live. Back then, there was no competition, so bandwidth fees were killing me. It was like $1,300, $1,400 a month. I was getting like a million views on some of my videos back then. I was way ahead of the game. I said, man, I got to turn this off. So I turned it off. But then Netflix came, Amazon Prime, and everybody started going
to the water.
Listen, all the bandwidth fees dropped because of competition, and there are all these different platforms competing against each other for streaming. And I came back with it 2 years ago. I kept my name. I kept paying my annual fee for my name. I put it on an OTT platform, and it's like conscious Netflix. I think we got 5,800 shows up there now.
Oh, and, good stuff.
Yeah, I've been grinding, man.
Hey, man, I love seeing Black people win and accomplishing things. Sometimes people act like it's too hard to do things. I'm like, nah, you might be too lazy.
That's what it is a lot of the times. Mm-hmm. A lot of people make excuses. I never wanted to take the victim mentality, you know?
Right.
You know, this happened to me. I had a horrible life growing up. I had a really tumultuous, you know, life growing up from a kid and everything from, you know, being homeless and eating syrup and toast, you know?
Right.
And so, but I never made an excuse. I always found that it was going to be me that was going to save myself. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And it was funny. One of those times I was on my way to do some comedy. There was this man, he was blind, and I think he might have been homeless too, just because of how he dressed, whatever. Yeah. But I remember I wanted to get up and give him my seat because the bus was crowded, and he told me, don't feel bad for you. And then, so every time, at times I might lack sympathy because of that moment, but I appreciate it because I don't feel bad for myself. I don't try to make myself a victim, just like you said. Because if a blind man that's on the bus that's probably not doing financially well, could take the time to not be a victim when he really is.
Yeah.
Who am I to sit up there and be like, oh, look at me. racism stopping me from doing this or whatever situation. Yeah, we all have struggles. Some of our struggles are harder than others, but it's how you handle it. It's not it's not about what you go through. It's about how you handle those things.
Exactly. At the end of the day, that's exactly what it's all about, man. So, yeah, we definitely would love to have you. I launched that network, and it's a subscription service, $7 a month, you know.
Okay. That's good stuff, man. I'm impressed by that. That's good shit.
And we want to definitely put, we don't have comedy yet. You'd be the first comedian on there.
Hey, man, you got to break the cherry somehow. Pop it.
Yeah. Do you ever keep in touch with like King Batch and some of those other people?
Some of them, not King Batch directly. That's my weakest part of what I do. Mm. My tool that I need to sharpen, and that's my networking skills.
Yeah.
Being a comedian, comedians really sometimes they don't be giving a fuck. And so that carries on to everything. That's why, like, I when I was working for iHeart, I used to do all the meet and greets. I used to be in the room with some of the biggest artists in the world, the Taylor Swifts, the Jay-Z. And I don't care at all. I did not. So when it comes to networking, I'm like, I don't give a fuck if they the CEO of Hulu's right there. I don't care. Like, and that's my problem. But I could admit that. So that's why I have people that we partner with or work for me that are my networking tools for me. Yeah. I suck at that. I should reach out to these people, but I don't. Like, I've been friends with big celebrities, and people say, "Oh, you should do this with them." I'm like, I don't feel like bothering them. But that's my one downfall that I need to work on is networking.
Yeah, well, you know, now that you're aware of it, and you're putting people in place to help you with that. That's gonna change, which is good.
Right. You know,
that's another thing I try to teach people: bringing awareness to your weaknesses, because nobody has all the answers, and nobody is great at every single thing. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I got a whole lot of things that I'm not great at, but what I try to do is just surround myself with people that can do those things for me. And you know what I'm saying? So they go out and they do their little pieces, and I just put together all the pieces of the puzzle, you know?
That's the best way to do it. That's why you go to somebody's house and they do all the housework, nothing worked because they didn't hire somebody that's supposed to fix it. Toilet messed up, the sink messed up, the paint looked cheap, the door swinging off the door, and you because you wanted to save, $80,
right? Peanuts, absolute peanuts. I remember a long time ago, I was married, ex-wife, and she was like, "How come you always, every time I tell you we need something done, you always getting somebody to come and you're paying somebody to do it?" I said, "Because they're experts.
This is what they do." It's not me. Like, I know how to change a tire. I know how to do basic the garbage disposal if I needed to paint, but I'd rather pay somebody to paint. I'd rather simply because I know that paint's going to be better than me because I'm not a painter.
Exactly. That's what it's all about, man. You know, I think that mindset of trying to save every single penny, it robs you of your abundance mentality. I think it puts you in a mind state of like your money is going to run out. I never want to feel like
Sometimes you save money.
Yeah, thank you. You save money. Like
a simple example. You go down to Target. You buy the 99-cent dishwashing liquid.
Yeah.
When you pour in that dishwashing liquid in the water for the bubbles to blow up, you use a quarter of the bottle until you see bubbles. If you spend an extra dollar or two, you put a little bit. The bubbles come earlier. Your mental thinks you have enough soap. That bottle lasts longer than the 99-cent bottle simply because you spent the extra $1.50.
Right. Exactly. Period. That's it. That's it. People have to understand how to use that kind of logic. So when you're doing your comedy, and sometimes you do your stand-up comedy, your live comedy, how do you deal with like hecklers and stuff like that?
Hecklers is I look forward to hecklers. I like when people interrupt. It's because a heckler gets it provides one thing. Mm. It provides a unique show.
Mm. Gotcha.
It's a unique, like everybody in this room, regardless of what city you're in, where you're at. This room, the heckler is going to scream something out that nobody else screamed out before. So it gives me opportunity to try to be funny or to clown them. It just provides opportunity. Now, comedy is a game where when you get on stage, you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
One day you might get a funny laugh. The next day you might get slapped by Will Smith. You don't know what the hell going to happen.
Right. Yeah, that's so true. We just seen that happen. man, that's wild. Yeah, I guess you're right. It is every day is something new, something random.
It's everything. We're not singers. I'm nothing against singers and people that do that, but a singer can go do the same exact show in every city and be fine. In comedy, you say 80% of your jokes might work in this city.
Yeah.
And then another city, only 20% might work. You have to learn to adapt to those situations.
Right,
and
right.
You have to figure out how to be universal in a sense.
Yeah. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And so since you've been doing a lot of this online, is primarily most of your comedy online?
Now it is, yeah. I'm actually getting back to hit the stage again. I haven't been on stage doing comedy in 2 years. No, about two, three years. No.
Okay.
Whenever the pandemic started. That was 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
The story is, so when I was doing stand-up at the age 13, from 13 to 18, I was doing stand-up every day after high school. Or if I had, if I wasn't working, I was doing stand-up.
Damn.
I ended up getting a job at a radio station, Kiss FM, as a street team. And I was still doing comedy at this time. I've had my job. And we was doing a live remote at a theme park called Universal Studios. And we had a band there called 303. They had like three songs on the radio, billboards, big band.
Nice.
When I tell you, people walked by and asked who this person, these people were, and I told them who they were, nobody cared. Not one person gave a damn. And I remember like, man, they know, remember the song. I was singing it to people because I'm street team. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And then like an hour later, after they left, there's this skinny white kid. It's like 2009. There's a skinny white kid. Everybody from Cholos, the little black kids, the old white ladies wanted a picture with the skinny white kid. And I asked somebody, I said, who's this? And they said, oh, he makes YouTube videos.
Oh.
I said, what do you mean he makes YouTube videos? And because at this time, you go on YouTube to learn how to tie a tie or how to make something.
It wasn't,
you didn't know there was personalities on YouTube.
Right.
And so that's the first time I said, oh, I can use the internet to get my name out there. And so I wish I was a hybrid and I kept doing both at the same time, but I literally neglected stand up and just was doing online stuff. I'm trying to make it more of a hybrid because what I do, I talk shit online. So it fits perfectly. I'm not doing skits or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha. Does it take you a long time to write all these, or is it just off the dome? How do you do this?
Most of the time I see a video, I get this question all the time, and it's literally off the dome. I write my videos out just to practice writing them, but I literally, the process, I find a video and post it, all could be within 30 minutes.
Wow. Nice. Wow.
And literally people ask me all the time, like, how do you think of that? I said, it's just how my brain works.
Yeah. Man, doing a show every day, that's a lot of work.
Yeah. Wow. Doing especially in high school, it's the drive.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
wow.
And then it just, I think doing the stuff online is prepping me, it's keeping me fresh, and it's keeping me ready for stage. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I got on social media to help my stage, and I just neglected it too much. I got to get back on, and
yeah. Well, everything's starting to open back up again, so you know now it's starting to give you an opportunity to get back out there. Yeah, man. Yeah, definitely.
100%.
Yeah. Are you going to plan on going on tour anytime soon?
Because first I got to do some shows and I got to do a bunch of open mics, get it up under me again. But of course, that's the goal, to do some tours.
Yeah.
I built up this platform. Now I got to go see these people in person. I got to go right in front of you and show you who you see online.
Yeah.
If not funnier, it's right here in your face.
Right, right. Gotcha. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome. You know, I'm having a premiere in Michigan.
Okay.
That's going to be June 5th. June 5th is a movie premiere of my documentary, Black Knight Satellite.
Okay.
I'm going to talk to my director of operations and see if we have 90 minutes, I believe, or 120 minutes total time, and see if we have any time for, because I'm going to talk a little bit too. If we have any time for a little comedy, then I'll hit you up and see if we can get you booked for that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with everything you've been talking about. It sounds like Gilbert Gottfried just died. I just seen it on my Apple Watch.
Oh wow. Wow. That's
67 years old. That was just rad.
That's okay. Yeah. Damn. There's a lot of people exiting out of here, man. A lot of people getting out of here.
That's another reason why you gotta keep every day that you don't work.
Yeah.
Somebody else is working. And like a lot of times it's very rare. You have somebody that's super talented and you got somebody that is super just a hard worker. The hard worker is always going to win. So you got to figure out how to be that super talented, and you got to be hard worker to get to the top. You just have to. People complain about like, oh, Beyonce is not even that good. Well, she's the hardest worker, and she deserves everything she got.
That's right.
You can't be mad at her for that because other people don't work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she danced. She practiced till her toes bleed, man. You know?
Oh, man.
Yeah. a lot of people don't really understand what the stuff that we have to do behind the scenes. And also, you know what they don't understand? The exposure, the transparency we have to have being online all the time.
All the time.
Being public all the time. I mean, I saw you get engaged and, you know, all the, I mean, that's, I mean, the, you know, now obviously, hopefully things work out, but it's a risk that we take when we do things like that, you know, and it, you know, exposing our personal life a little bit to people. It, a lot of people love it, but people don't know how, for us, sometimes it's like, man, you know, it really, you have to be, it really opens up your transparency and you have to be kind of vulnerable to do this kind of stuff sometimes. You know what I mean?
100%. Yeah. 100%. Because like you said, when you open yourself up, especially, I'm a comedian, so I open myself. I've been used to doing that. Right. And that's why there's a lot of things, like a lot of personal trauma, a lot of things that I want to do. The reason why I make some of the videos, like there's a point in time where like the Black Lives Matter and with all the cop stuff.
Yeah.
I used to get a lot of hate because this is peak Trump. This is peak racism, peak everything that's going on in the country, especially on social media. Mm-hmm. There was, when I was younger, I've experienced a few racist things that were like pretty fucked up. Like one time I was the president at my middle school. And the reason I was president, because president gets to be Santa Claus. That's the only reason I ran for president.
Yeah.
Be Santa Claus. And I won. I went to a school that was out of my area because they didn't have uniform. And in elementary, I wore a uniform. So I was like, I want to go to this school. It was in a white neighborhood, poor white neighborhood at that.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know at the time it was a big deal that they were going to have their first black Santa Claus.
Oh, man.
And so but at the time, I'm a kid. People say, you sure you want to do this? They're doing this. So the day after I was Santa Claus, the school was tagged up with fuck niggers. And I'm not saying it was directly because of me, but there was one, that, and it didn't hit me then until later in life, where it said, it said, fuck Santa Claus, fuck black Santa Claus on one of the graffiti things. And then also, like 4 or 5 years after that, in high school, there was a white girl that went to that same middle school. I seen her. She said her father took her out to school because she took a picture with a black Santa Claus.
Damn.
And so there's things like, I have so many, like, I've probably, when I had my Thunderbird, I probably got pulled over in the span of like 30 times, not one ticket.
Yeah.
And there's so many different things. So a lot of times I act the way I act and I say the things I say because I thought the shit that I was going through was supposed to happen to me because I'm a black American.
Right.
I was conditioned to think that this is okay.
Yeah.
And that's why when anything like that happens, I come out loud because there's black kids that follow me. And I need them to know that that shit's not cool.
It's not okay. It's not okay.
You shouldn't experience the shit that you're experiencing.
Yeah. You know, I remember, I have 5 kids. They're all adults. My youngest son is 22. And, he was the one I waited the longest time.
You said your youngest is 22?
Yeah. My oldest is 31. Oh, my youngest is 20. I got four grandchildren. The fifth one's coming soon. Yeah.
I don't know how old you are, but you don't look it. I'll tell you that.
I'm 50. I'm gonna be 51 in September.
51. Okay.
Yeah.
I would have thought like mid 40s, early 40s. The way
I appreciate it, man.
You're killing the game.
Just trying to eat good and work out. You know, get my walk in. You know, I don't try to kill myself in the gym. I just try to stay in shape, you know?
I've been playing with the same 50 pounds for the last 4 years. So I lose it, gain it right back.
It ain't easy, man, especially as you get older.
Man.
But I used to watch my son, you know, I waited for him because he seemed like he was the most green. There's no other way to say it, you know what I'm saying? And I just felt like if he would get a car early, like the other kids got cars a little earlier than him, I just thought he wasn't ready. Finally, I got him a car. I think he was 19, 18 or 19. I got him a car. And he was like, man, I thought this day was never going to happen, blah, blah, blah. And then every night every day when he would leave in that car, you know, I would be panicking like, man, you know, I wonder if he's going to make it home. And I think a lot of people don't know what it's like to be a parent in a situation where you don't know if your kid, when he drives out, is going to come home alive because he's black. You know, a lot of people take it for granted. They just think, oh, no, you know, just comply and just do what you're supposed to do. That has nothing to do with it.
It's deeper than that.
Yeah.
It's like there's a point I like having followers on social media. I love it. There was a point in time that I used to go to a Target in between a certain period because the security followed me on social media. They didn't see me as just a regular black person. They see me as somebody that makes them laugh. So I would go to this Target at this time. to feel like I wasn't being followed around. I like that feeling. There was points like I got to go to Target from 10 to 12 because my guy worked up there. And because I would go to different, till this day, if I go to a different Target, no matter how I look, yeah. whatever, I feel like people are watching me.
Right. Yeah. No, they probably are. Yeah, I've been in a lot of situations. My father, unfortunately, I seen him get beat by cops when I was younger. It was a wrong identity. It was somebody around the corner they're supposed to be going after. He was just coming out of a laundromat trying to pay our rent. The lady who owned that laundromat was the landlord. And they, I saw him get hit with the butt of a rifle and get pummeled to death right in front of me. And then when he was 74, now he's only 100. My dad was only like 115 pounds, 120 pounds max. Small guy. Right. He had on a suit I bought him. He went to a big 50s band concert that he was invited to in Palm Bay, Florida. And he was put in the front row by one of the band members. It was one of his neighbors who invited him. He never leaves the house. He was like, I'm just going to stay home. He begged and begged him. He finally left the house, went to this event, sat in the front row. Long story short, he gets beat up by cops. We get the 911 call. Somebody called a Karen, called 911 and said there was a black vagrant harassing people in the front row at the concert. So within 4 minutes, they came in and literally gave him a double concussion and broke his back and then left him there bleeding in front of all the
kids. He said he was 74 years old? How old was 70, he?
74 at that time.
What year was this?
That was about 3.5 years ago. And then that broken back led to his death because they didn't fix the back. And then he was drinking like five cases of beer a day to cover it up. The pain and taking all the pain pills. He went to the hospital. It was in so much pain he couldn't take it anymore. And what happened was they actually didn't give him his beer and his pills, his medicine, and he went into withdrawals. So the police brutality led to his death months later because they put him in the hospital with nothing to cover up his withdrawals, and they didn't even feed him for 2 days. And he ended up having
that Karen led to your father's
death.
And that's sad.
Yeah.
Especially because he didn't even want to go out. You said he barely goes out. Goes out, and
that's what happened.
And it happens far too often for people to just be like, it's not a thing.
Yeah.
Like to not acknowledge.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's cognitive dissonance. They want to put their head in the sand and pretend like the whole world is great. You know, I know this guy, actually a good friend of mine, but, you know, a white guy. He's a billionaire, but he's in complete denial that racism is at a high level. He doesn't believe it because I said, you're never going to be able to believe it or see it because you're in a little bubble and you're never going to be able to experience it because this incarnation, you're a white man. You're not going to be able to experience what I experience on a daily basis.
Never can explain the feelings of how it feels to just deal with it daily. To actually think, people always ask me, oh, why do you make videos about race so much? I say, my whole life has been about my race. So,
right.
This is the way my mindset. I'm sorry that this country has formed my mind to think of black and white people. This literally has been like that for me.
Yeah. It's a reality.
People don't ask why. They just complain about what happened. Never ask people. There's a reason why things happen.
And right.
If you dig deep into it, it's just like if you put any race, any gender in a bad environment, they will act violent. And just like you put a bunch of white people in the same environments that the Chicago has, there will be a lot of white homicides. It'll be a lot. It's not a genetic thing. It is an environment thing.
That's right. That's exactly what it is. That's exactly
it was crazy. You remember the Ferguson riots? I think that was like 2014, 2015.
Yeah.
There was this picture that came up the day after the Ferguson riots, and the picture looked messed up. It was of the city. It looked screwed up, and then it had a date of when this picture was taken, and the date was set a day before the riots. So people were living in these conditions, like you were made to think, "Oh, this is what the riots did," but no. It been looking like that, so of course they're gonna act like that. Look at these lack of resources. Just ask why, go down the rabbit hole.
It's the lack of resources. You know, I remember I was in a car. It was me, my brother, and a friend. My friend actually is white. He's actually my best friend at the time, Kevin Waller. He had a 1978 Monte Carlo with Truza bolts on it, crushed down interior, boom. And we're driving around. Now, that car had just been stolen like about a month before and recovered. And he fixed it back up again. And we're just driving in Miami. and we get pulled over by a cop. The excuse was that the car was stolen, but obviously they ran the tag and realized that the car was, this is a recovered car. There's no stolen. Right. He gets out. He's talking to the cops. They're talking to them all nice. When my brother and I get out, they want us to bend, take our pants down and bend over. We're on a busy road. 411 is a busy road, right, four lane road with cars. It's broad daylight. They got us dropping our drawers and lifting up our scrotums to see if we have any drugs on it. But not my friend who owns the car, by the way. He's good to go. But we got to lift our scrotums up in broad daylight, you know, and all this kind of stuff. You know,
it's so crazy. I have a similar story. I didn't have to lift my scrotum up, but my wife friend, he was driving his car. We got pulled over. Cops came to my side, the passenger, asked for my ID, asked if I had all drugs, didn't ask him for his ID, didn't ask for nothing. Literally, they threw my ID in the window. They drove off. I was ready to go party still because this is my life. I'm used to it. And he was shook on what just happened. Oh, that's crazy that we have similar experiences. Yeah. I didn't lift my scrotum up, but still, it's why?
Why? Like, it's pretty standard. You know, we grow up with it, so we know. But they, you know, all we can do is continue to, and you need to, like you're already doing, continue to bring awareness to it so that people can see this is a real issue and real situation that we need to resolve.
Right.
Because, you know, for us to elevate as a people on the planetary, racism has to die, because until we're all free, nobody's free.
Right. 100%.
Yeah, man. Hey, man, it's been a great talk today, man. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
All right, what's up, people? I'm James Andre Jefferson Jr., kicking it with Forbidden Knowledge. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, eHarmony, blackpeoplemeet.com, all at James Jefferson J. That is JamesJefferson J. Everywhere. I got my own podcast called Off the Mic. Pretty much just me talking shit for 20 minutes about current topics. And yeah, just check me out.
Check him out, guys. I'm telling you, he is funny. I'm talking about funny, man. I die every day. Yeah, I look forward to it because, you know, I have to look at so much trauma and drama every day to be able to sort through what's happening in the world, to be able to create content, to put out and make people aware of things. And I got to worry about, am I making them too scared or fearful? I got to get balance. I got to give them something good now so they can feel good about themselves. Then I got to bring something, you know what I'm saying? It's just balance.
Right.
And then, but for me, I'm downloading all of it. I got to see
all of it. You've seen it all. You're like, oh, damn, this is dark.
Yeah, it's dark. Super dark. Yeah. So I go to pages like yours, man, just to free my brain up. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I appreciate you, man.
Please keep doing what you're doing, brother.
Hey, man, thanks for having me. Keep doing your thing.
Definitely, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Hi, I'm Billy Carson, researcher, speaker, and best-selling author of The Compendium of the Emerald Tablets and Woke Doesn't Mean Broke. I'm inviting you to join me on ForbiddenKnowledge.tv to enjoy hours of great programming, learn the secrets of ancient Egypt, unexplained structures on the moon and Mars, financial literacy, holistic and healthy lifestyles. Go now to ForbiddenKnowledge.tv and get 3 days free. While there, you can enter to win a Rolls Royce. That's ForbiddenKnowledge.tv. You are watching Forbidden Knowledge TV. Hi, my name is Billy Carson, and I'm the president of Forbidden Knowledge. We have an amazing investment opportunity here for anyone who wants to buy shares in Forbidden Knowledge. The money that's generated from this crowdfunding platform is going to be used to bring on a new content acquisitions partner. We're going to hire a new in-house graphics designer, a social media manager, put together a customer service team and a customer service management program that will organize and satisfy all the different legs of Forbidden Knowledge, Inc., as well as, and of course, make more improved high-quality streaming content for the Forbidden Knowledge TV platform, which right now is featured on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, iOS and Android apps, and also, of course, the web. The streaming platform is a year old right now and doing very, very well. And we're looking for your support, where you can not only be a conscious customer, but also be a part owner in an amazing opportunity that includes streaming TV, book publishing, and e-commerce. Grow with us and earn with us. Forbidden Knowledge, Inc.
You are watching Forbidden Knowledge TV. This is Billy Carson with ForbiddenKnowledge.tv. Forbidden Knowledge TV has just reached its 1 year anniversary. That's right, 1 year. And as a show of appreciation, we are giving all new subscribers a free 30-day trial of ForbiddenKnowledge.tv. That's 30 days to binge watch thousands of movies, documentaries, conferences, workshops, lectures, yoga classes, meditation courses, and so much more. So log on to ForbiddenKnowledge.tv from your computer or mobile device, or get the Forbidden Knowledge TV app on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon, iTunes, or Google Play today, and use coupon code 30DAYSFREE. That's coupon code 30 days free on ForbiddenKnowledge.tv today.